is Climate Talk Uganda. I am Josephine Karunji. In the past few weeks, we've been looking at climate change and how it plays out across the public health landscape in Uganda. And we'll be going back to that in the next episode. But today we're taking a slight detour, and I'm going to share an interview that I recorded late last year with Mrs. Ruth Chiwanuka. Now, Ruth Chiwanuka is the Chief Executive Officer of Joint Energy Environment Projects, an organization that was founded in 1983 and that continues to work today to combat environmental destruction and conserve natural resources. I was interested to speak with her because she's been in environmental activism for a very long time, and she brings a long-term perspective to that work. By the way, I've noticed, and you will notice, that we both continuously refer to her organization by the acronym JIP in this audio, because when we recorded this, I wasn't as hardline on the no acronyms rule as I am now. So here is Ruth Chiwanuka on the founding of Joint Energy Environment Projects. So you started in, this organization started in 1983.
Yes.
What was the, why did it start?
These Ugandanese, one was late now, Sylvester Sentamu Makumbi, was a journalist. Another one was Mr. Joseph Waluria Mukasa, was a farmer, at the same time working with the prisoners. And a lady, Teddy Muzira, was a nurse. They were somewhere in the, around Jinja, and we are, you know, friends as people usually are. But they used to talk together, looking at things, listening to radio, to television. But what touched them was the news from Ethiopia. Ethiopia in 1982 had a very serious drought. And the news continued coming to Uganda, I mean, as from the papers, from the television and radio, that Ethiopians are dying. They have a very serious drought. Trees are all down. Animals dying. The soil is gone. It was so bad. But as themselves, they knew it was all about environment. Seriously, the Ethiopians were working just like we do, using the soil, cutting trees, cooking with firewood, and all that. Ordinary work, as we do here. So, Sylvester, Teddy, and Joseph Atwaluria thought of how they could help Ugandans not to run into the same problem. And Ethiopia being not very far from Uganda, they said, we may run into this. Why don't we start something? Maybe talking to Ugandans about taking care of the environment, basing on that example. So they came up with a kind of program. Unfortunately, by that time, Uganda had civil wars. So it was so hard for them to gather and talk to people. Any time they tried, they thought they were also, again, you know, kind of...
kind of rally.
So they were not able to practice that. But they kept talking, coming up with good ideas. How do we run this and that? Sylvester was a journalist. So he had many kind of slogans, kind of, you know, communication people know. And he said, hey, okay, let's come up with a vision. And their vision was a safe environment for a sure future. A safe environment for a sure future. And they said our mission now should be to stop destruction of the environment and promote efficient use of natural resources.
For our listeners who might not be able to see what's on the paper that I'm looking at, this is your 1.5 program for Uganda Wood Energy Conservation has number one as improve stoves and kitchen energy management households and institutions.
Exactly.
And then there's improve wood burning industries.
Number two, they looked at those small, they call them the small wood burning industries, like bricks, making bricks. They use a lot of firewood. And this brewing, they use a lot of firewood. Smoking fish, they use wood. So they looked at those small things and wanted to say it could improve. But that one they thought it could be the government to come up with a policy, which policy never came up.
So number three is improve charcoal production.
Yes.
What are we improving?
The traditional way of producing charcoal in Uganda, and probably many African countries, is very, very extravagant. If they cut it 10 tons of wood, they come up with only one ton of charcoal. A lot of it, the rest is burned to ash.
Number four is encourage alternative fuel. So
yes.
Briquettes, I see sawdust,
mm-hmm.
I see a number
biogas.
Of okay.
And now we have electrical pressure cookers.
I see solar as well. Mm.
Yes.
Number five is tree planting.
They mentioned that last. Because by then, we had a lot of forest in the country. You were not there, but we had a lot of forests, we had a lot of bushes, everywhere, natural forests like Mabira was all big forests, Bugoma, Zoka in Germany, many, many. So they could not mention tree planting. People would just say, And in fact, I remember them telling us that when they went to Busoga, they were saying, hey, but the trees grow themselves, jamera, you know, they grow on their own, so you don't need to talk about tree planting.
In thinking through these five areas that you've spoken about, so improve stoves and kitchen energy management, improve wood burning industries, improve charcoal production, encourage alternative fuel and tree planting, how are we doing?
Oh, we are struggling a lot to see the implementation of those kind of things, but we are also being attacked by the people destroying the environment at a very, very high rate. So, even if you tell people that plant trees, they say, but the government people are cutting all those trees. When they say that, you start looking like, I don't know, what do you say next to such people? Why do they cut, as you are telling us to plant? Why? You know. And sometimes I was in Kalangala and they were mentioning a person from Makerere University, from the Forest Department. They knew the name, and I knew the name. And I said, oh, this Mr. Chuan, it was not another. He's doing this! And the people know. The ministries, foresters, people concerned. I think they are not doing the work to help the people.
What kind of activities are you carrying out in the communities?
In the communities. When we create awareness and we discuss all that about energy and tree planting and soil conservation, water conservation, we say now we have to train people about making this energy saving. So we train people how to make energy saving stoves themselves. And we usually train not more than 35, expecting them to be trainers,
yes.
devotees, to go and make first in their home and then start training other people around. They have tried, but they always say when it has to be to go far distance, transport is not easy. So that has retarded for many years. It has not, the speed has not been as high as wanted, because definitely they have a lot of domestic work, including agriculture, the cultivation, looking for food, looking for water, and then comes in this energy saving stuff, construction domestically. So it would be so good that this dissemination of stoves and these other technologies would be far, but those are the problems. Then we talk about tree planting, but we show them how to start a nursery tree plant so that you can get it and have seedlings, you can plant and you can sell.
How receptive are these communities to tree planting? Because tree planting is not something that you're going to benefit from directly.
No,
right. Especially if you're thinking about your kinds of trees.
Mm-hmm.
How are you speaking to farmers to get them interested in it?
When we mention we are in class discussing, wherever we gather, we sit, we tell them, we have a tree planting formula which says who should plant trees in Uganda. And we want them to answer, discussing with us. And most of them say the government. And we say, now when will government come to Luweero and plant your trees? That's when they start realizing. They say, me. Then they will ask, why should we plant trees really? Can you tell us, everybody, you can, whether you went to school or not, but you know, because we use the local language, why is a tree good? Then that's when they will say, for firewood, and they may say for building, for tables. But then we end up having about 30 or 40 purposes of trees. Then you see, if you don't plant a tree, you are losing all that. You want fruits, you want wood, you want firewood, it is important. And if you happen to go to the forest and cut all that, then you are forcing the animals to come to eat your food because they are in the forest and you are then they come. It has happened in Bugoma Forest, in Hoima, when they started clearing those animals which eat people, they take. Like those at Busia, as you go to Busia, oh, what are they?
Try to
those animals. They started coming and taking babies from home and eating the food in the kitchen and everywhere because they were deleting it, cutting the trees in the forest, which has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. And the people in leadership who are hired ministries and all that, I'm sure they have heard or learned about the purpose of the trees when they are in the ground, that they can get water when it rains, and they can store water in the ground, and they can release it afterwards, you know? So, you know, we talk about those problems and say, oh, the solution is this. About this, the solution is this, you know?
But I think I see a lot of where your teacher experience comes in, because your conversations with communities is participatory. You're allowing them to really reflect on their problems and think about solutions that make sense for them.
Together. And before we train.
And I think it's easier for people to accept and adapt when they understand how this benefits them or affects them.
Yeah, unfortunately, because we are an NGO, as like many NGOs which are all over in the country, and NGOs are known as the bodies which go down to the grassroots, like I'm saying, much more than the ministries. And we have districts, and district is a government. But when we introduce all this district and they know all about the project and what we are going to do, then we say, but the time we leave, it is you to come on. And you are free to come when we are training and see what we are doing. And you are free to go back because you have a lot of field work. You see what the people we trained, whether they are moving on or not. They have environmental officers, forest officers, fisheries, energy. All those officers are there, properly paid, and they have vehicles.
Is that happening though, when we're thinking about sustainability the work that you're doing? That's a very deep sigh.
And when you go back for follow-ups and say, oh, Mr. District of Forest Officer, Mr. Environment Officer, Natural Resources Officer, all those people have desks and offices. You have not been to the field to see our work, our people. You should, you know, you give them energy. When you go, they say, this three person came and saw my stove, he saw my trees, he saw my, you know? They say, fuel. And do you continue with such? Because we cannot fundraise money from donors and you say, we also need fuel for district people. They know it's a government. So disappointed. I feel terrible.
Do you have particular interventions that are targeting or speaking directly to women? And, you know, just thinking about how climate change is affecting them and maybe sharing from your own experiences, your lived experiences.
The women are the victims, proper victims of all the changes, whether climate or environment or it's a war, whatever, the women. And that's why in our programs, we always want to have at least 70% of women, because we know they suffer a lot. They are the people taking care of all the domestic work, their home, the children, including the man, the husband, like whenever there is a problem, for example, the climate changes, the weather is bad, the food is scarce, it is her who suffers most. The heart because of the children, because of, you know, everything. There no water, the children, you know, it is too much for women. Too much for women. In fact, when it comes to building stoves, we thought it could be, a man would become very active, but they say, hey, it is he who was trained. He doesn't even ask, how do we move on together and we make it? So you can find she's the one who's looking for food, looking for water, fetching firewood, and constructing the stove. Yes?
Why is it difficult for people to understand that when you say, for example, that climate change affects is affecting women more, why is it a difficult concept for people to wrap their heads around?
I don't understand why they... I thought it was so obvious, but I don't really understand why they don't see that. Even a man with his wife and children who sees the struggles or the, you know, when it comes to these kind of things, he looks like he doesn't understand that. He doesn't help. But the problem in our countries, I think we started with the countries we came into being, and the men came up with funny, horrible, terrible cultural practices which favor men.
Give me an
example. A woman should be the one cooking. When you say that, she's the one to fetching firewood, cooking, suffering with smoke in the eye and the nose and the lungs, taking, you know, a woman. Cooking is a lot of work, especially in the communities, when you really see. She's using open fire flames. She's looking for firewood. It is a woman and girls who go for fresh firewood. The stove is taking a lot of firewood, so she has to frequent the bush or the forest, whatever, to
water.
Get firewood. The men, when they say they don't even fetch firewood, when they say you can get firewood for the school and they pay, the money then is not, a, you know, that one is like a woman. Now he goes because there's money. When one time we invited people in Iruelo, and the men came instead of the women. Old men, 35, we said we invited women. They said women are so busy with the domestic work, that's why we came instead of them. So we said, let's move on. We did everything, we trained them how to make this, and we told them the stove we are making now is made of mud and cannot be left in the open air, the rain will spoil it. And many of them did not have kitchens. You know, many communities, people don't have kitchens, they cook outside in there, you know. So these men were the happiest people. They had to go and construct kitchens to put in the stove. And the women were so happy because they got the kitchen and the stove made. And when we went for follow-up, we were so happy because we found many stoves and many kitchens built, and the men could enter the kitchen because it is almost smokeless. So he can sit there. Oh, my God. And he explains and he feels so proud because that stove has a whole... has a hole and another one, one saucepan first and then another one and a chimney. It's that kind of scientific kind of way. The guy would properly explain, you know, when you put here very few pieces of firewood, the man now is in the kitchen. The fire is cooking here and then some fire goes to the other and the other pot gets fire and the smoke goes in the kitchen. It's fun. Anyway.
A lot of the work that you're doing is on energy solutions.
Both right? Energy and tree planting.
Okay.
And, you know, and more at the center, JIP, you know.
How easy is it for the communities to take on these energy solutions that you share with them? Yes, speaking through sustainability, but also the costs.
When we talk of the costs, because these local stoves, those are free of charge, you know. They use the soil, the earthy soil, they use the grass, they use their legs, they use the water. they only apply the the skills we have.
Okay.
Yes, imparted on them. So those are free. But what we have noticed, say a few years back, maybe 3 or 5 years, is when we started working with Save the Children as partners, but funded by European Union in those areas of refugees, those districts, Yadongo, Adjumani, whatever, all those,
Arua,
yes. Okay. What the European Union money accepted was to give cash for work. And that has boomed the dissemination of the technologies. Because when Josephine learns how to make a stove, she would go and teach another, she would build another, she would make it. So she goes, because every stove, every basket, she's given some money.
For making the stove or for teaching somebody?
For making the stove, and they can count the stoves. If you have made about 10 or 12, you get money for that, for the basket. Something we have never got in our programs for so many years. So our efforts have been going to people, encouraging them, sweet talk, you know, encouraging, you've done so well, can you help others? You know, but you can imagine the person leaving a home, especially women, to go and teach other people, coming back without any penny, any coin. It is not easy. So the speed is so low.
Ruth, you know, if I'm a Ugandan who is listening to this and you're saying they cut down the exotic trees and then they were just planting all of these other trees.
Exotic.
Why should I be bothered that those ones were cut down, as long as we are planting trees now, right?
Oh, my God. They are cutting and planting and cutting to sell. And those species like eucalyptus and pine don't help the soil. Eucalyptus sucks a lot of water in the ground, a lot. And when the leaves fall down, they make a carpet like, which does not allow water to go down when it rains. They know it. Those people went to school and to universities, and I think some of them have PhDs, but they do that. Not thinking about the environment. What does the soil need? Soil needs water. What do plants need? But you know, it is so hurting.
How does a school teacher become a climate activist? Because this is what it seems like you are now.
Imagine. When I started, I was a teacher, and Jeep was already existing, but they used to move to different villages. By then I was in Basakaro Chengera Mugongo, the school, and somebody told them that there is a lady there. When she talks so well. I think some people, sometimes in the church I could preach, and people would say, oh. When I go to the LOC meetings, I would explain, but of course I'd say, hey, this one will take the school, takes the children to school, we learn this and this, but also at home, and they would, So when the Jeep people were working, voluntarily they're trying to see how they move into the program, they invited me. And I accepted because I'm a teacher and I know how to talk to people.
Yes, you do.
So I started voluntarily with Jeep like that, just over weekends. Sometimes Saturday, sometimes Sunday. But in the weekdays, school.
What were you telling the people? What were you telling the people?
They had already told me what they want to talk about. Want people to know that we can economize on the fuel, we can plant trees, the dangers of the smoke. Then I could just add as using my knowledge. And then later I said, I think I should leave the school. I want to find a job where I continue with my teaching, but getting a little bit more, because the schools used to give us so little money, and I had 5 children. So I joined the Jeep. I went for an interview, and I passed, and I was given a place there, and I was given a women mobilizer. Then I was already thinking, so many there are women like me. I wish they could join this. I wish they could come to the meetings, the trainings. So I was so much for women, but environmentally. Yes.
But so my question is, for people who climate change seems very far removed from them, like it's not really my business. I'm not a farmer. I'm not, you know, I'm here in Kampala City,
yes,
in an air-conditioned room. This conversation on climate change, why should it be my business?
Oh. I think that is the narrow, very narrow way of thinking. This person does not even think about where she or he comes from in the village, because she's here in Kampala. But still in Kampala, also the environment is poor, is bad. This is the person who doesn't know that from the room like this, you go out and the polluted the air is polluted everywhere, and maybe doesn't know even the pollution is coming from where, or he knows, but says, it's the government. The industries are being put up with a lot of smoke. The water is flowing over the roofs, nothing is harvested, and when it rains, it's terrible, all the water is flooding. If it is in the community, the soil is going. So these things have to be, people have to be informed, and eventually have to be forced to apply the right practices.
Ruth Chiwanukahu is CEO of Joint Energy Environment Projects, a non-profit that works to fight the destruction of the natural environment and to encourage best practices that will preserve natural resources. You can find out more about Joint Energy Environment Projects in the show notes for this episode. And remember, you can also drop us a line at climatetalkpod@gmail.com. I am Josephine Karunji. This is Climate Talk Uganda. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.